podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Do you fancy a free case of beers? Of course you do. And that is where our friends Beer 52 come in. All you have to do is go to beer52.com/paddock and pay the measly fee of £6.95 postage, and you can get 8 unique beers delivered right to your door that you will not find anywhere else. Beer 52 are the UK's number one beer club, and every single month they bring you a brand new box with different collaborations, different breweries from around the UK and beyond. And this month it is very, very special because it's the absolute powerhouse that is Northern Monk. They've got 8 different beers that you will only find in this Beer 52 box. Northern Monk have collaborated with loads of other fantastic breweries in this box, including this one from Rivington Brewing Company, an absolutely beautiful 7% IPA that's got a pillowy mouthfeel, if you can imagine such a thing, and of course, a brilliant hoppy finish as well. Let me just give that a little taste. Oh, fantastic. Also included is a smooth IPA and a decadent, lovely stout from absolute heavyweights Neon Raptor. And if the idea of dark beers and stouts puts you off, you can just choose the light only box as well. And don't forget, there's a couple of free snacks in every single box. And it's not just the snacks you're drinking, you're eating, you're also learning, because there's also Ferment magazine inside the box as well, which has always got fantastic articles and loads of information about the beer you're drinking and the beer scene in general. And after all of that, if you aren't satisfied, you can simply just pause or cancel at any time, so you don't even have to worry about it. Head over to beer52.com/paddock, and again, you will get this box of beer for free. All you have to do is cover the £6.95 postage and packaging to get your box now. Once again, that is beer52.com/paddock, beer52.com/paddock. Go and check them out.
Jay here from Stretford Paddock. This is the Paddock Podcast, and joining me, as always, is my good friend Ronaldo Brown. You all right?
I'm great, how are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. What are you smirking at?
I was just so happy and overawed the Brentford performance. I've been smiling ever since.
All right, we're going to get into that. Don't you worry. We're going to get into that. Also, joining us is an old school member of Full Time Devils, right? Mr. Jonathan Schrager. And I was trying to work this out. When do you think was the first time you were on this channel as its previous
iteration? Definitely did fan cams with Nicola back in like the... you know, give it gigsy till the end of the season.
Do you know what, right?
Around that, so.
Because I was putting together a little video on Andy Tate, because it's been 10-year anniversary.
Yeah.
If you can believe that, since his famous, or his infamous, give it gigsy till the end of the season, and biggest fool in Manchester rant. I know they're two separate ones. And I was looking through the old fan cams, and you popped up there back in the day, so that must have been, well, it would have been 2014, wouldn't it?
Yeah, probably with Moyes, I reckon, and... probably quite positive at the time. Yeah. I reckon today
it's horrible, isn't it, that the video evidence that you've got, that the people have got against us sometimes, because I've said some absolutely ludicrous things on fan cams and on fan reaction. Yeah.
I actually wrote an article at the end of that year for Red News about we should give David Moyes more time or something. Something ludicrous.
You weren't alone, right? There's videos of Mikola singing "We'll Stand by David Moyes." There's one where me and Steve did a video talking about Jose's going to win us the title. Mm.
Yeah.
There's the infamous one, I think, I can't remember.
Well, moments in time, that looked like it was feasible.
100%. I know, you've got to remember, put it into context. In 2014, we were the reigning champions until the end of that season. Like, in 2015-16, we'd won a title 2 years ago, 3 years ago. Now things are a little bit different, which is what we're going to get into. So make sure you are hitting like, share, and subscribe. Ronnie, me and you were on the Brentford watch along together, and you know, I enjoy your company and I enjoyed eating some Easter eggs, and it was, you know, in that respect, it was good.
We were struggling, weren't we?
But it was horrible. Like, that football game was just, there was no, other than the 38 seconds I got of celebrating Mason Mount, there was just no redeeming qualities for that game for me.
Do you think it was really weird as well? The feeling was really weird when Mason Mount scored. We all like got up and celebrated, and we were like relieved, and we were screaming. Yeah. But then after, it felt like, what have we just done here? Do you know what I mean?
I almost felt guilty.
It sounded really weird. Yeah. But we were 1-0 up basically in the last couple of minutes of the game in stoppage time, and I actually felt guilty that we were winning. Yeah. I genuinely felt bad.
It felt
for
like
Brentford that we were winning.
It felt do like. I mean? Do you know? Do you know, like, There's certain YouTubers like that me and you talk about sometimes that we watch now and again. Yeah. You get annoyed when United score. Because they ain't.
I could never get.
I'm not going to start naming other channels on here, but there's certain ones who we've seen, and it's like they get a little bit aggy when United score because they're like.
Doesn't fit their agenda.
And also, I just think it's like, more of this nonsense. And I wasn't quite there. I will never get like that. No. But I felt a bit, like you say, guilty and almost embarrassed.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what am I watching? How have we taken the lead after what was 95 minutes of pure, unadulterated dross? It was terrible.
And the thing is, what's funny is, obviously, the players do get a lot of flack, and a lot of them actually do deserve it. But it's like, when you're watching United, and we are playing badly, and there's a lot of that last-ditch defending, and everything's based on the edge, and we ride and I look a little bit. Even during the watch-along, we did say, you wouldn't surprise us if somewhere McTominay scored a goal, or there's a little bit of a moment of brilliance, because even though some of the players are performing terribly, and they have shown a lack of consistency and form, there's still a lot of players on our team that are capable of moments of brilliance. And it just felt like at any point, do you know what I mean? We could score. So when Mason Mount scored, I was happy for him because obviously he's gone through a lot in his first season. But at the same time, it felt like, wow. It felt like we were a bit embarrassed about it because the performance was like, there's a lot of contenders, but it was honestly one of the worst of the season.
You didn't have long to be embarrassed though, did
you? Do you know what I mean?
I ain't going to lie to you, Jonathan, as well, right? When they got the equaliser, I was worried they were going to get the winner.
I thought
they could kick on now and do what we did to them at Old Trafford and actually score two goals in the last 90 seconds because they were all over us, weren't they? I mean, we're going to get into it a little bit more in detail, but what was your initial reaction to at the end of that game? Because you're a pretty level-headed guy. Yeah. How did you feel about it when you sort of the dust had settled?
It's I don't know, I'm so sort of... I don't know, I feel like I don't want to be too downbeat because usually I'm quite an optimistic Red.
Yeah.
But I think over the last 10 years, increasingly, I have been sort of beaten into a bit of submission when it comes to United. And my expectations are so low now with the team that when we perform like that, it's almost like they can lower your expectations even further, but still, they're still already low anyway. So I wasn't even necessarily surprised we played like that. Obviously hoping for a bit more, but... it's like when I was coming here today, I'm trying to think of ways to, like, obviously we'll talk about Ten Hag and everything like that, but my head's just frazzled with United. Like, sometimes I think, no, we should give him more time and we should, you know, preface certain things with injuries and stuff. And then I think, well, yeah, but, you know, ultimately it's still not good enough. So I am a little bit conflicted on Ten Hag and United at the moment. I really am.
I'm getting a bit more like that. Like last week, I was more pro Ten Hag. I was very sort of sticking up for him.
Yeah.
Did a few videos on this channel and elsewhere where I was like, look, give him time, let him come into this new structure. But the more I see of what I saw the other day, the less easy it is to defend that
and to have that faith.
Yeah, because you get tired of it. I don't work for Manchester United Football Club. We work for ourselves, and it's like, I'm just giving you my honest opinion. I haven't got a reason to... no one's paying me to stick up for him. And it's hard.
It's true, usually pre a manager being under pressure or their job being on a little bit of a knife edge, you kind of say that you can see sometimes the players down tools, etc. Yeah. But the weird thing about United right now is... when I watch them, I don't see players that have like down tools or like turned against the manager. No, I don't see that.
Agree.
I just see like a poorly structured, poorly coached side with players that also can't perform to the best of their abilities or aren't performing to the best of their abilities. So it's a combination of a lot of things because how badly United are playing, it's not just solely because the Tyler Villos who's to blame, but it's not solely one way or the other. Obviously, it's somewhere in between on the spectrum because you've got players that aren't playing well enough, you've got certain players that aren't working hard enough, but then you've also got like a team set up so poorly week in, week out, and
it's hard to know where to apportion the blame, isn't it?
Exactly,
because a bit of everyone's at fault.
Yeah,
but
you're
ultimately,
right.
It is, as we've seen in many occasions since Fergie, it's the manager who bears the brunt of it.
Ronnie made a good point on Saturday where... a lot of us have this idea, and I've been guilty of it, so by all means, you'll see me saying it on other podcasts and other videos where you go, we can't keep sacking managers. You can't keep sacking managers. But you made the point of, But if a manager's not good enough, you can't say, well, we've got to keep him because we can't keep sacking managers.
That's my problem. And a lot of people, yeah.
And then there's the even more bleak viewpoint. Again, don't want to be too downbeat about United, but there's an even more bleak viewpoint that is there anyone that can rectify United at the moment? Because I've sort of getting to the stage where I'm thinking we've tried so many different formulas and respected managers as well, that is it just almost a little bit beyond repair until we sort the things out above the manager? That needs to be sorted out first and foremost before everything else can fall into place.
I agree with that, and I made that point last week about I would like to see this manager being given an opportunity under the new regime, if you will. My worry is, I don't watch loads of football, but I watch enough to see other teams with less resources, with worse players than we've got,
bang on,
playing better than we are. Yeah. And I hate to do this, right, because it feels like I'm proper sticking the knife in on Erik ten Hag, but I watched Brighton lose to Liverpool at Anfield.
Yeah.
And I swear to God,
they played very well.
With players that probably, I think about 9 out of them players won't get in United's first team. Maybe one or two would, but I think the vast majority wouldn't in the Brighton team.
Danny Welbeck's still starting up front.
100%. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? 100%. But I watched him, and you think, even when the 2-1 down, they're playing like a style. There's something there. And I know De Zerbi's a little bit the hipster choice and all flavour, but I'm just telling you as I see it. I saw a team there and I go, because I wanted Brighton to win, obviously, and I'm sort of cheering them on. Yeah. But like, they've got a good chance.
Even Brentford, because we've heard the injury excuse as well. And Brentford, no one talks about the fact that Brentford had their two best centre halves out as well, which has been a constant excuse that we've given.
Yeah, absolutely.
They didn't have Ben Mee, and they didn't have Ethan Pinnock. And Ethan Pinnock's probably one of the best, like, in box defenders in the league. Actually, he's very underrated. Yeah. So their back line was makeshift. They had Lewis Potter basically playing left back, and he's like a winger slash 10.
Yeah.
And they still structurally outplayed us, and there's literally no excuse for it. And I'm watching it, and I think people are too far on one side or the other. And I think because I've seen some people go too far to defend the manager without actually seeing what's happening in front of their eyes on the pitch,
yeah,
that I've had to then become, do you know what I mean, when you see them on Twitter, too far the other way, when I'm trying to be somewhere murked in the middle, because I feel like there's players to blame, but I think the fact that we're seeing the same problems time and time again, it's insanity, because that's literally what the definition of insanity is.
Yeah.
And I'm almost in the matter, because with Ineos, everyone's like, you want to see Ten Hag under Ineos because it's a new regime. But it's almost the fact that a new regime has come in with Ineos, looking to change everything and reshape everything. I feel like it's even more bleak for Ten Hag, because they might want their own guy. And I think the best defense of Ten Hag that I've actually seen from people say is, out in the manager market, is there someone that's notably better? That is the only issue that we have. But the excuse that I did hate is the one that Jay mentioned. You can't say, because United have been sacking a lot of managers, that doesn't excuse sacking a manager that isn't good enough at the time or needs a change.
Do you think, right, I'll ask you both this, starting with you, Jonathan, do you think, because, forgive me, but Gary Neville, I was on the overlap the other week, Gary Neville made this point, and he was sort of thinking out loud as he was going through it, and he wasn't really giving me a definitive answer when I was asking him if he's back tonight, but he was saying that maybe there's an opportunity for him to learn from this season.
Right.
Can you see that happening? Because that used to be a lot of the criticisms aimed at Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was, you can't learn on this job.
Yeah.
Because some people used to say, well, he's growing, he's learning, he's found his feet. And people say, well, you can't learn on your job at United. But do you think you can? Or do you think that's nonsense?
But the difference...
And I know you're coming from a place of you and Gary Neville are Bezzies, because he's been on your channel. Yeah, but you still can't get him on this one, despite the amount of appearances we've made on his. But that's a different story. Forgive me.
He's... he winds me up now. he does wind me up as well when I watch him. But I think the difference, obviously, with Ollie and Ten Hag is, and I've seen... Because I do obviously watch you boys quite a lot, and sort of... And you never have to justify yourself in terms of how you are, because you're very level-headed as well. I think you're very reasonable, Red.
Try to be.
I think Ronaldo is as well. I think most of the people are on this channel.
Can be quite controversial, apparently, but do you know what I mean?
Do you know what it is, right? It's like, he does those things, right? It's timing. We're all guilty of it. Have you ever sent a tweet out and then a minute later, 2 seconds later, someone scored, the player you've just been slagging off has scored?
I put on Saturday plus one goal difference when we scored. that's the achievement now. And then 1 second later,
Ronnie's the king of this.
I tweeted something about McTominay, and then he scored.
He scored twice today.
Do you know what I mean? Like, he did his usual performance of like not being involved.
Chelsea. No, it was Chelsea. Yeah. Brentford. No, it was Chelsea.
Nah, it was Brentford.
Oh, was it Brentford? Right, Brentford. So he's like slagging off at somebody. Don't let any.
Scored two goals in the last 5 minutes.
Yeah, sort of. Like confusion that he scores two goals. So people read it and go, right, he just scored two goals in this game and you're slagging him off. What's wrong with you?
But I tweeted it before he even scored.
Yeah,
and then
of course.
He scored.
Yeah.
It's funny. My tweet generally was, because of how bad McTominay was playing, I said if McTominay scores a brace, even if he scores a brace, I wouldn't want him starting. And then he went and scored two goals in the last 10 minutes. He was a Brentford at all.
Was it?
And everyone's seen the tweet
did you,
after.
But did you then maintain that you didn't want him? Or did you go back on it? Did you retract it?
Nah, I don't go back on it.
Double down. On this channel, Jonathan.
I had to keep digging
that hole, bro. You do never back down.
Not everyone's always going to agree with you, do you know what I mean? I'm not going to shape my opinion for most people to agree. I'm just going to say what I think, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And the thing is, right, like, after the game, we spent a lot of the game criticising certain players and did it or whatever. Like, not like going personal or whatever, but you're going like, poor performance. Marcus not the races. Again, I'm sick of repeating myself about him. And at the end of it, you'll get people who just go, these lot, man, they'll never say anything negative about Marcus Rashford. You think we've just spent the entire game so criticising the kid. You know what I mean?
That's, this is the problem. The thing you do, like, you end up doing verbal gymnastics. Yeah. And I hear you do it sometimes. And I remember I used to do it. Like, you end up having to preface everything you say with, I love Marcus Rashford.
But I've done that so many times, bro, you're right.
Because someone might watch your clip in isolation and just say, oh, he's having a go at Rashford, he's anti-Rashford or he's pro-Rashford, but you're always doing both sides of the thing. But
it just gets tiring, doesn't it?
It does get tiring. Most of the time, you know you're a reasonable man. Yeah. I don't think even you have to justify it.
Mm. No, I think you're right. And I think, like, especially, you know, I've heard Ronnie sort of explaining it in a way that makes sense. If you don't agree with it, you get it. Do you know what I mean?
If
you're not just going, I think this because it's a feeling in my gut or whatever. You go, look, this is what I'm saying. This is why I believe this. And people still sort of have a dig. But I think the problem we've got now, not the problem. I think we're in a place now where I'm almost like I can see anyone's point of view anyway with this. Mm. I can. Absolutely. Like, there was a time where, if last season someone had said to me, and there were people, believe it or not, who said, Eric Ten Hag's not the guy. Get rid of him. Yeah. I would have been like, are you insane? We've just won a trophy. We're in third in the league. We've not been beaten at home for the last 7 months. It'd be insane to sack this manager now. But however, now you're looking at it, you're going
regression.
Yeah. Injuries are a factor. I get all that, but still, I'm watching a poor side week in week out. Other than like the odd game, like Everton or Liverpool, of course. A lot of the time, I'm watching a team that are struggling. Let me just go in through some of the comments, Ronnie, then I'll come back to you. Akash Paul says, I really hate games like Brentford because it shakes the faith in your manager, but that players picking and choosing when to perform is unacceptable. Eric Ten Hag's post-match pressers do not help him. I'll ask you about that in a sec. Michael W. says, I honestly can't see Eric Ten Hag keeping his job beyond this season, and I know it's the players out on the pitch playing half-arsed each week, but surely that's on Eric Ten Hag to get out of
that. Were they against Liverpool, though?
No. But would you say? Because Harry Maguire said that the team and the manager went for it. And he said, the manager said to us, let's go man for man and let's go for it. And we finished the game with Dalo, Bruno and Antony in defence. And I'm not saying we should do that in every week. We shouldn't do that again. No. But we'd gone for it and we got a result. And is that on the manager line to try and do that, a bit more of that? Not the same, but a bit more of, so let's go for it.
Can't we do that every week? Why can't we do that against Brentford, against a team that we should be beating? That's a Brentford side, by the way, that had 31 shots, completely outplayed us in every department of the game, that are actually one of the worst form sides in the last 10 Premier League games. Brentford have been in disastrous form, and they literally came into that game and played like they've been on an eight-game win streak.
You called Wiese R9.
Like, the joke I made is there's always one player that United play against that we make look like a world beater.
Cunha for Wolves.
Yeah, you said that.
You made him look like
he said exactly that. We were saying if I was the Wolves manager, that Muniz I'd have sold Fulham. Him the week later. Yeah. We would have got about 60 million for him.
Was it a world beater Muniz for Fulham as well?
Yeah, Muniz for Fulham looks...
Basically, if you're a player or a forward and you want your transfer value coming up, play United. After that, because everyone's going to watch anyway and have your eyes on you, but we poor at doing that. And I think one of the absolute basics of football is if you're playing against a team, you need to neutralise surely their biggest threats or their forward. Yeah. But we seem to play against teams and make their best players shine. Because it's like Tony was brilliant against us.
He was.
Do you know what I mean? And you know he's the threat. You know he's the danger. And it was like, we almost let him do what he wants. He looked like a class apart from the rest of our players.
Man, this is what worries me with Ten Hag a little bit. Increasingly this year, this season, it has been.
Sorry, Jonathan.
You're all right. It has been that it's like you say. I watch the players now, and sometimes it's the easy excuse to make, isn't it, that they're not trying or they've down tools. But I, like yourself, I'm starting to question whether they're just well drilled enough, because I'm watching a team, and half the time you can pick certain players out who you might question whether they're putting everything in, like Marcus, for example, because that's just an eye test, that's obvious. But the actual shape of the team and what they're doing is what's starting to worry me. But then obviously pro Ten Hag people will say, but it's because he's not got his personnel that he needs. So it's, I see all sides of the argument, but ultimately it's excuses, isn't it? And if the results aren't up to it, then he will have to go at some point.
Do you know what's that? I agree. And you know what's the difference between managers being good and being elite? The elite managers, especially at this level, are able to make do with the resources that they've got.
Yes,
and exactly. They're able to maximise what they've got and what they're playing with.
Yeah.
The constant excuse that that United need their absolute full complement of 11 for Ten Hag to get a result or play well is more of an indictment than a positive. Do you know what I mean? Because the better managers are able to adjust or kind of formulate some sort of game plan or structure to make up for certain weaknesses and strengths of the team.
Yeah.
Whereas we just go out there every week with no shape, no style, no structure. And as much as you criticise the players, which some of them they do, because the stuff like Bruno and McTominay and Rashford just giving the ball away every time they get it, that's not on Ten Hag.
No.
But there's some things that you see where I feel like sometimes the framework and the distances between players doesn't help them. And also when you're talking about work rate, with the amount of gaps and the spacing issues in the team,
yeah,
I feel like Ten Hag's almost asking a lot of the players anyway. You know, when we talked about how much the midfielders have to run because of the huge gaps and the team not being compact. If a team's compact, everyone has to run less.
Yeah.
You can work harder in shorter bursts, do you know what I mean? Whereas you've got to just cover long distances when the game's like a basketball match, and then you're surprised when we blow out.
Is there any defence, just to play devil's advocate a little bit? Yeah. And Steve kind of made this point in his post-match review for us, that whilst everything you've said is true, it's inexcusable, some of the performances, but even though I'm going to just make a slight excuse, we had 7 players that started from the Ole Gunnar Solskjaer era.
Mm.
9, if you want to count the kids, even though they obviously never played under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer because they were far too young. My point is that a lot of those players, including the whole back four, weren't Ten Hag signings. So can we give him any leeway because of injuries? Because obviously he's bought players. He couldn't play hardly any of them because none of them were fit.
But then there's the obvious one, the sort of the elephant in the room being Antony, and the fact that he's still on the bench and he's now willing to sacrifice him.
Yeah.
And then there's a few things, isn't there? Go on, you're all right.
Don't worry, we've gone on to the wide shot. Don't worry, your signal was flickering. Yeah, your camera.
I mean,
I thought it was
just the amount of
got shy of you.
Yeah, the amount of sense you were talking with like altering the cameras. But no,
what I was going to say is that there's players, you know, that anyone that's anti Ten Hag or whatever Ten Hag out could point to certain things as well, as many things as you can point to defend him. It's now becoming at a stage where there's things that you can use to criticise him. And I don't know, I am increasingly concerned about Ten Hag. Like, what would you even say is his style? What is he trying to do? Because apart from that inverted winger, which it's hardly a secret in Europe now, is it?
Yeah.
Like, what unique elements are we actually seeing on a weekly basis? Because I don't see it.
He literally admitted that he abandoned his style because he didn't think we had the personnel to play it. But from a first standpoint, I would much rather a manager stick to his philosophy, style, try and attempt, and even if you fail, rather than abandon it. Because what he's abandoned it to hasn't worked either, but at least it shows a little bit of balls, a little bit of bravery. Do you know what I mean?
That's what we got him for, right?
Do you think
an element maybe like last season where after those first two games, he kind of did abandon it, didn't he?
Yeah.
And you think like he's sort of reverting back to that, thinking, well, I abandoned it and it worked and maybe I've got to do that again.
It's even the buzzword control now. Everyone talks about control and dictating the game because I'm not making games so like transitional because we're getting caught out playing this way. And we were calling out for a midfielder. We were chasing De Jong for basically two transfer windows, someone who can get his foot on the ball and almost dictating there. And then the big signing that we make in midfield is Mason Mount. Do you know what I mean? Which doesn't go. That's the issue. Obviously, that's probably a board thing. I don't know if that was a manager request, but going from De Jong to Mason Mount as your midfield kind of choice showed a bit of a lack of almost idea and structure, because they're not the same players in the slightest. Because you wanted De Jong to come in and be a number eight, but then you've also went and signed Mason Mount to be a number eight, who's basically a marauding number 10, similar to what you see with Bruno. He's not going to make the team better on the ball or make you more, or have you more control or dictate possession more or any better. And I think what helped Ten Hag was the introduction of Mainoo, because Mainoo literally came in and he's played like a 40, 50 million pound player who is that style of player. And I'm actually concerned, because I think if we didn't have Mainoo as an 18-year-old that came up through the academy, who on earth would United have in midfield that's capable of keeping the ball and getting their foot on it and not treating it like a bomb? No one. I think if we didn't have Mainoo playing, it might have actually been worse.
Oh, 100%.
Do you know what I mean? 100%. And that's an 18-year-old who is playing in this poor side and still excelling. And what I'm so concerned about, which has been something that United have done really poorly in the past 10 years, is improving players during their tenure at the club. And a talent like Mainoo, my worry is United are not going to give him the development he needs, because he's having to play out of his skin every week. Take all this and shoulder all this responsibility in there, be the calm, composed head in midfield at 18. And I think it's almost too much too soon in the responsibility side of things. And I would have loved for someone like Mainoo to be playing in a better side, performing better, where he can almost progress at the rate that he needs to. Because now, there's so much expectation on him and there's so much responsibility that if he even drops a game where he's a little bit off it, which you should be expected when someone's young, it's all going to go to shit in there.
Nah, I agree. And I think, listen, I hate to say, and there's 115 reasons for another 115 reasons for hating him. But you look at, for example, someone like Phil Foden. I can't think of a player in modern times who's had a better introduction into a football team than him. It's literally perfect. The perfect way to bring someone in. You give him little cameos at the end of matches. Then you give him a dozen games the next season. Then it's two dozen. They're coming into a side where they've got loads of the ball. They've got world-class players around them. They're at the top of the table. They're battering teams. And then eventually you get to a point where now I think he's 24 years old and he's I think he's got like a Wayne Rooney trophy cabinet at that age where he's won everything basically. And
even his little indiscretions along the way have been handled well. Like debacle with England, he came back and knuckled down and you didn't hear from him again because Pep obviously grabbed him and said, you can't be doing that sort of thing.
And then you look on the flip side, say someone at United, now I'm not saying they're the same player or that even as he's naturally talented, but someone like Marcus Rashford, we can criticise him all you want, but I don't think he's been managed particularly well.
No.
I think you've had a player who came in at 18 years old and was only because we had a load of injuries, let's not forget, when Martial gets injured in the warm-up against Midtjylland. Marcus is thrown in, scores a load of goals, so he started every game all of a sudden. Goes to, I think it was the Euros that summer, comes back, then he's in and out of the team. I think Jose's rotating with Martial, it's just like he's in. Then he's in the middle, then he's on the left, then he's on the right, then he's playing when he's got injuries. Under Oli, we hear about he's had a damaged vertebrae and he's still playing. It's not a great way to manage a player. And he has to take some responsibilities for poor performances.
It's true. I'm not excusing him. I fully agree. I've come to that conclusion as Jay, where like Rashford needs to take a lot of responsibility for what's happened to a lot of his performances within the last few years and the way he's reacted to things and some of his work rate. But also, there is a bit of me that thinks he is also partly been a victim of
100%
of this United circus that it's been for the past 5-6 years, with the overinflated contracts you've given, the responsibility you've given, the kind of like how you've fluffed him up to be this proper superstar too quick that he might not have been yet. Because all in all, when you look at Rashford, especially in his early days, I think the tools were there for him to be playing better and performing more consistently than he has. But I think there's been a number of things. I think he has to take a lot of blame for what's happened. But I think the almost disease that's been the career arc at Manchester United, so to speak, I feel like it's affected him as well.
I was watching a video when I think it might have been when he was in the under-18s or under-17s of the week, like a compilation online. Yeah. And I couldn't believe, like, I didn't even realise how good he was back then. Yeah. Like, when I look at him now, even athletically and everything, he's not doing those type of things that he was doing at under-17 level. Just absolutely rinsing players. Like, they shouldn't have been on the pitch with him.
Yeah.
He was that good.
We've seen it's
sad, really, that he's not.
I'm with you on the Mainoo thing as well. It worries me. Because you look at it the other day against Brentford, and he didn't have his best game. I'm not going to pretend he did, but look who's around him. Look what they're doing. He's an 18-year-old lad in the midfield where he's expected to almost control the game. And he's got Bruno, who's having an off day. He's got McTominay, who's nowhere to be found around him. And you think, it's not his fault. We're in danger.
Jesus. Imagine being like an 18-year-old midfielder trying to find your legs in there. Because he's still in the early, he's only played a certain amount of games. And you've been thrown into a midfield as disjointed as that, and you're told that you've got to play with Bruno and McTominay. God help you.
Yeah,
positionally. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
I know obviously maybe he ended up coming off in the end, but even when like Casemiro comes on, he's off the pace and he's diving into challenges and giving the ball away, and you're like, bloody hell. Yeah. Like, there's no one here who you think shows a bit of composure other than Mainoo. It's like, at the minute, the whole team seems to be just.
Another thing that I thought you mentioned. Another thing I thought you mentioned that I did tweet is because. Obviously, the people that are overtly really pro-manager, no matter what's happening because of sacking manager in the past and giving time, etc. And some people have like certain affinity towards whoever's managing United at the time. That's just part and parcel of being a fan sometimes. But the issue is, what I've seen is when United might win games that they're playing poorly out of individual bits of brilliance from players that do have it in them at times.
Yeah,
people are like, where are the Ten Hag haters now?
Ten Hag, do you know what I mean? Step outside.
Back the manager, whatever. But then when United lose, they then go and say, oh, the players are rubbish. They're down tools.
You tweeted this.
You're
very consistent, because I was going to read that, but you just said it. Yeah. You tweeted it on
I literally tweeted it, because I was like,
because it's true. Yeah. It's like, you've literally just what you said, like, you can't have it both ways. And I think the one thing that worries me slightly is this opportunity we've got in the summer where Klopp's leaving Liverpool.
Yeah.
There's managers that are available. It's, you know, Bayern Munich are probably going to be looking for someone. Barca, I think, we're looking for someone. Liverpool looking for someone. So you might say there's limited options, but there's going to be like a lot of clubs, big clubs, who are looking for managers. And we wait and we end up with a manager who, you know, a year from now we're sat here going, we should have, you know what I mean? Yeah. We should have took our chance.
Twist,
innit, yeah,
basically.
And I think it's been said many a time, and I think it's true. If he's got any chance of turning this around, he has to do it between now and the end of the season. I don't think he's going to get, if he carries on this way, that Ineos is just going to go, well, we'll give you another year.
Yeah, I stayed fair. I said, I don't know if you've seen it, because I think Jonathan says sometimes he laughs at my tweets, but
he's a fan of yours, Jonathan.
I very much said,
I think you're a funny guy.
I very much said, I stayed fair and quite nuanced. I was like, if Ten Hag finishes the season strong, we get top five in Champions League, and even if we get to the final and lose to City, I wouldn't be against Ten Hag having another season. I thought he probably would have earned it then, especially with the way the season has gone, because he has faced a bit of adversity as well.
What about if he gets sixth and wins the FA Cup, or if we get beat in a narrow loss to City?
I think if he doesn't
final,
get the Champions League, he's in trouble.
You think it's basically rides on Champions
League?
I'm
a bit the other way, mate. I think he could save himself by winning the FA Cup.
Yeah.
I think I'm not saying you can argue whether he should or not. To be honest with you, if we beat City in the FA Cup final, I want to build him a statue. I'm not going to be saying I'm gonna be like the most pro Ten Hag guy you'll ever meet in your life.
Because you can be reaction. Because I'm not going to lie to you, after we beat Liverpool, I was a bit like,
yeah. If you come out of Wembley in the FA Cup final, wherever you're watching it, and we've just beaten City and like won the FA Cup, you are going to be like, it's going to be pretty hard to say Ten Hag out, even in. You know, the cold light of day, you might go, actually, this season hasn't been as good as it can be.
Man,
the problem.
Van Gaal did, didn't he?
Yeah, but do you know what it is? Yeah, right? It's a good point.
See Rooney's story on the overlap.
What was he saying?
He said that obviously before the final, he already knew, like,
he had to be, yeah, it wasn't.
That he was being sacked. And he remembers, because Rooney said he really loved Van Gaal.
Yeah.
A lot of players said this, they really liked him, didn't he? He must have been a pretty cool character. They said he wanted him to get involved in the celebrations a little bit more, Rooney said, but he could tell he was so downbeat and that with his family, because the fact that he had to leave when he was told that he was being sacked.
It was shabby that by United. Because everyone knew, didn't they?
Yeah.
You knew it. Everyone knew that Jose was taking over. But the way the club went about it, to sack him on basically the Sunday, put Jose on the Monday, when we just won the FA Cup, was bang out of order, I think. And he deserved better, because whether you liked Ten Hag or not, Van Gaal or not, you know, he deserved better than that. He did. Yeah. And let's not forget, you know, I'll tell you what, it's not often we win the FA Cup, is it?
No. And he was probably the first to call out what the club was becoming at the time. If you remember, he was the one saying there's too many commercial commitments on pre-season.
He said it in his first press, didn't he?
Yeah, so he was actually the first to go out and speak out about it.
A few super chats that we'll get into. Danny says, so we're saying Ten Hag, Ragnik, Ollie, Jose set up bad. Ed, who's been a member of the academy for a month, thanks for your support, says Eric Ten Hag looks like he's going out like Van Gaal, deluded till the end. 90% of the players don't give a toss about him, the club, the fans. Get them all out, hashtag everyone out. Sounds like pretty much what Andy Tate was saying after the game. Abinav Verma says, why is our team bottom of running start sprints? No tactic works if you run like the way our team does. I want to just ask you something about it, so now I'll start with you, Ronnie. I'll get to you, Jonathan.
Wait, that like, if you run like the team does, like, part of management isn't even just the tactics. It's the ability to galvanise your team as well. So you're kind of talking about whether bottom of the sprints, and I feel like that's a stat that you've just probably pulled from your ass anyway. I feel like you've actually not even seen that from up top.
I've not seen it. Do you know what I mean? Try and find that out.
I think part of that is like having the authority about you and having the presence about you to like to make sure that your players are putting the work in and pressing and doing the things you want to do. Because I think that's what the elite managers are able to do, and also not having it where players can do that and get away with it. Do you know what I mean?
Well, this is the thing as well. Where has this changed? Because last year, we were all praising him for how authoritarian he's been and how he's dealt with certain big character players and that, you know, the team's still playing for him, everything. So when's this changed? That's what I'm trying to work out in my head.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you as well.
You can't access those without being like...
Signed up to something, I wanted to ask you about his comments after the game because he has this trait, Eric Ten Hag, of sort of circling the wagons a little bit, praising his players or not being too downbeat, dismissing issues a little bit and not making out things aren't that bad. And he kind of said in a roundabout way he wasn't overly concerned about the amount of shots we've conceded, which everyone thought was, you know, a bit of a weird thing to say at best. Jonathan, what do you get from Eric Ten Hag in his personality, the way he conducts himself? Because sometimes I feel like that goes against him a little bit.
100%.
Because you look at someone like Postecoglou, and Postecoglou, who has obviously done better this season than Ten Hag has, albeit they're out of the cup, but he's got a style. The team are obviously in a very good position to get Champions League football, but also his personality gets him a long way. He seems like the kind of guy you'd want to go and have a drink with. Whereas Eric Ten Hag is a bit aloof, you know. And I don't think it's just a language barrier. I think he speaks English better than most of us do. Yeah. But I don't know. Do you feel that goes against him sometimes? Just the way he carries himself.
Yeah, he's increasingly making less sense in these press conferences, if we're being honest.
As Macca would say, it's the United factor driving him mad.
No, there definitely is an element. But he did hint at, he alluded to, lack of passion? Was that his word? Desire?
Yeah, I think he might have said something like that, which is a criticism. Itself. Yeah,
you know, so he's basically admitting himself that he's watching that team, and maybe that's to deflect away from his lack of tactics and just setting up the team, that he's now starting to drop in little things like that about the players not giving it their all or something. Yeah. But there is an element of, like I was saying before, I really don't know when this has turned in terms of, we all were praising him about how authoritarian he was and he was getting a tune out the team. And this season, we're now questioning whether they're even playing for him. Some people are anyway. And I think a lot of it comes down to, if Marcus plays, and everyone can see he's not giving 100%, but then he continually plays him because he's scared to drop him, because he's had to deal with all the other things like Sancho and Anthony and everything like that, then it becomes excusable to put in those levels of efforts and carry on. And other people will then see that, won't they? And this is where the whole culture comes in at the club of, is everyone giving their all for it?
What do you make of it, Ronnie? Because we've spoken a lot, me and you, about Ten Hag, the personality, the way he is. Is he a manager that you'd like to play for? Is he someone you think you'd respond to?
I don't know, because I'm obviously not being around him, but I'm a huge believer that managers and their teams usually can be a reflection of them from an aura and a personality standpoint. When you watch like Liverpool, it's almost like it feels like a Klopp team, the way they are. Or you're watching a City team, it feels like a Pep side. Even Arteta now, it feels like their imprint is on the team and the way they play from a personality standpoint. I think strong, good managers can do that. It's even the same yesterday when you watch Thomas Frank and you see Brentford.
He's almost
like, yeah, it's like the way the team plays, the way they are, and the whole aura of the group is a reflection of the manager. And then when you sometimes get like, some people may argue about Ten Hag and his charisma not being there, and the fact that he's so like stoic and he's got almost dead behind the eyes a little bit, and then you're surprised that the team almost seems a reflection of that some at times. I know that you can get managers like that that even though they are like that, the team can perform well and do well in things. It's but almost, I don't know. I feel like it's hard to say.
It's usually one or the other, isn't it, with a manager. So like in press conferences, they can be a bit boring and just very generic. But on the sideline, you can see that passion and animation. Like Arteta, he's dull as anything, isn't he, when it comes to press conferences?
No, it does matter.
On the sideline, he's annoying, but he's passionate and you can see it. Whereas Ten Hag, thinking about it out loud, he gives you neither on the touchline nor in a press conference. You don't get much from him, do you?
No.
So it's like you say, he is quite stoic in all elements.
Yeah, he is. And I think that might end up going against him. And obviously, there's been certain issues, like you say, the Sancho thing, which hasn't helped, and one or two other things where you've had this sort of disciplinarian thing that has worked a lot of the way, but sometimes it has backfired a little bit. And I think that might, you know, be one of the reasons. I don't think there's ever going to be one reason where you go, that is the reason that he got sacked or that it didn't work out. But it's a load of little reasons. It's like death by a thousand cuts, whatever. And I think there's, like, you know, the Sancho thing, the Antony signing, the injuries caught with him.
Yeah, it's true. I'm not even talking about him like meaning to be like frantic on the touchline and that. I'm not, because that doesn't matter to me. It's more just like his presence even in interviews and press.
No, I think
I don't need him to be out there running up and down like being on the sideline. That's not what I'm referring to. It's more just
Do you know when he came out fighting in a presser about 4 months ago? He came out like almost angry, and he fought his corner and he had a lot to say. And I liked it. I thought he didn't, because sometimes when managers do that, it looks forced and stupid and they just make themselves look. Remember when Moyes used to try and do it?
Yeah.
Like, shut up. Yeah. And he looked like he was losing the plot, because he was. Or Mourinho come out, or even Van Gaal come out and just snap at everyone. But it looked like he had something to say. He was making a case for himself and he was sort of fighting his corner, and I liked it. And it worked as well. I think we had a good result not long after that. And I thought, okay, I like that. But then it sort of faded away a little bit. And I know it's not his fault. I'm not trying to be hateful towards the guy, but he didn't look well. I don't know what's going on there.
His eyes and that. He looks
ill. I don't know if he's had flu or something, but he looks ill, which doesn't help. And at times when you want to see something from him, he just looks like he's moaning rather than being constructive. I mean, it's a bit damned if you do, damned if you don't, but I just feel at the minute it's getting harder and harder and harder to see the positives in what's going on with Erik ten Hag. It just is. And this is from someone who's backed him from day one. Even before day one, I wanted him over Pochettino. I was 100% like, get Erik ten Hag.
The sample size is pretty huge now, isn't it? That's the...
Yeah. You're not going like, it's been like 12 games or whatever. It's been two seasons, and if you're going to be overly harsh, you could even say post-Carabao, there's been worries.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
I don't think it's been quite, we fell off a cliff that some people have made out post-Carabao, because if you look at the results, we haven't. But certainly post-then, there was a little few things we can actually... And the one thing that you always had last season was your home form.
Yeah.
That's gone out the window this season.
Yeah.
And even to the point now where it's not even the big teams that I'm worried about. I'm genuinely worried about us playing anyone.
Oh, absolutely. Like, yeah.
You know,
it's a lottery.
It is a lottery, you're right. And it shouldn't be like that. Loads of people in the comments, but not many likes. Hit those likes button. Hit the like button, please, people. Matt G says, Erik ten Hag managing a hodgepodge of players for different styles. Most clubs' recruitment is based on a single style.
True.
By a competent director of football scouting team. Well, he might have that soon if he's given the opportunity to work underneath it.
Hasn't Ten Hag had significant amounts of power, though, since he's been here? Because people are giving in, I don't understand, so people are using this to defend Ten Hag, saying he's not got the players he wanted and this and that. And when he's been very much a part of the talent ID and recruitment that we've had since he's been here, bringing in, obviously, Martinez, Antony, he's the reason we spent 80 plus million on Antony, by the way.
Yeah.
Hoyland,
he vouched for Mount. He was the one that he seemed to push that.
Oh, he had to be in his.
He forced through Amrabat. Yeah. He forced through the Amrabat side.
Jesus
as
Christ,
well.
I forgot about
with him. So, and he personally requested
one of his. Yeah, I mean, I like Onana, but still a Ten Hag signing.
Certain people to sit there and just be like, he's not got the players he wanted. The players aren't his fault. It's a mishmash of different players and different this. He's had a significant amount of power and involvement in the recruitment since he's been here. And part of the thing that's that might actually irk Ineos in eventual meetings, whether he stays or not, is apparently Ten Hag wants to keep the amount of power that he did have. And Ineos aren't sure about that.
Give me your 100 million. I know what to spend with it.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah. It's pros and cons, because you're thinking about it. Like with Antony, if you remember, we bought him on the back of that other desperate performance at Brentford last year, didn't we? And the thing is, any competent club would have said, well, they'll only accept 90 million for him, at which point he should have said, well, he's not worth that anyway. Yeah. That's a worry with Ten Hag. But on the other side, you can argue that why wasn't a recruitment team or an analyst team coming to him and saying, we've got four other options for you?
Yeah, that's what should have happened,
that's
really
what should happen at a competent club. So there's always a defence and an attack you can have with Ten Hag. So it is nuanced, you know what I mean? And that's why ultimately I come down on the side of whatever they decide, I won't be too upset. If they would decide to give him another year with a proper structure, I'm all right with that. Whereas if they decide to part ways and go with someone else, I'd also be okay with that, which maybe last year was inconceivable because we were chuffed with him, weren't we?
Yeah.
But this year, I'm sort of now on the fence.
Yeah, I'm actually...
Are you on the fence?
Not even that. I'm just confused by that you being used as a Ten Hag prop, the whole recruitment thing, because I want to look at the starting 11 that we had against Brentford.
Yeah.
How many signings did we have that started that against Brentford that were before Ten Hag's tenure?
Seven.
Yeah.
That were before his tenure?
Yeah, seven started. They were before his tenure. Wan-Bissaka, the Lindelof and Varane. Yeah. And also McTominay, Bruno and Marcus.
You can't include academy graduates. McTominay.
Mainu, McTominay, right?
I'm not talking about academy.
Oh, right, okay. Well, I'm not going to count Mainu and Garnacho, but I thought before
Rashford
his tenure,
and McTominay.
Rashford, I mean, I don't know.
I'm more talking about players that were signed.
Oh, signed, right. If it's signings, then you've got Wan-Bissaka, Dalot, Varane, Lindelof, and
Bruno.
That's
a pro-Ten Hag thing, isn't it?
Do you know what I mean?
This is the point that Steve was making on the.
It's like half and half, isn't it?
Yeah. There's still a lot. But then again, you made the point.
You've still got.
He spent a lot of money on Antony. He's there. Yeah. And he didn't start him for a reason because he ain't good enough.
Which, in a way, is good.
And Amrabat on the bench.
Amrabat, the forgotten man.
Yeah.
The one thing I do slightly gets me concerned.
On the bench.
Yeah. Is sometimes I've heard a few people saying it's like he wanted De Jong though. We didn't get De Jong. Things would be different with De Jong. You can't base your managerial career at United on getting one player.
No.
Like if you don't get that player, then you can't expect me to have success because that's just insane. I'm not saying he's saying that, but I hear that argument being made a lot that we needed to get him De Jong, and it's like United shouldn't be based on whether we get Frankie De Jong or not.
No,
you should be able to do all right without him. Loads of people in the chat. Just one thing though, I want to say David Briscoe has gifted 10 memberships. Thank you, brother. That's really good. A couple of people, forgive me, I've lost the names, saying you know what happens to standing by the manager. And listen, I'm still standing by the manager. I'm just saying it's getting harder, and I'm getting to the point where I'm worried. I'm very worried, and I'm sort of not as emphatic. Look, this is going to be a happy ending as I was earlier on in the season, and that's not me sort of turn on the manager. You just got to look at what you're seeing in front of you and you just think, is it good enough? It's not. Kenny says there isn't one single issue. You can't blame one single person. The whole thing is a mess. I agree. James Sommer says only four players from the 4-0 Brentford defeat at the start of the season played yesterday. Shows it wasn't purely down to the players. Ten Hag, and we obviously mean Saturday, has to take the blame. Abhinav Verma says Champions League or bust is a shit reason to keep a manager of your long term. You stick with someone because they fit long term. Lewis Archer in the super chat, thank you, says people praised Ten Hag last year because the players they thought were dickheads were seemingly being phased out, and the players they wanted to be phased out this year are not being phased out. Dave Briscoe, thank you for that. Buzmer Molnir says United started 11 against Brentford, had two Ten Hag signings in it. Onana and Rasmus. Listen, I think we're in a stage here where no matter which side of the argument you want to be on, you can make the case.
Yeah.
If you want to stick with Ten Hag, which at the moment I do, if I'm being honest, if you had to ask me a binary question, yes or no, yes, I want to stick with him, then I can make the case about injuries, about the structure, about whatever.
Yeah.
If, however, you're not, you can make the case of, look at what you are watching. Look at it. Is it good enough for a Manchester United team that spent, even under this manager, 500, well, 400 million or whatever it is? No. So I think the only thing I completely agree with, I think you said it wrong, I think everyone said that, I think you said it as well, Jonathan, is we'll know more by the end of the season.
Yeah.
I think there's still
a
long way to go.
There,
we've got the FA Cup against Coventry. That's not a given after fucking Saturday.
We've got the Scousers and Chelsea this week.
Yeah.
So there's no rest there, is there? I mean, yeah, if you lose both of them, you're done. I honestly think that. If you win both of them, everyone's going to be rallying just around you. Service, I know that sounds just fortunately, but it's true.
Fortunately, Chelsea are just our record's all right against them recently, and they're just as much as a mess.
Yeah,
they're probably. I think they're more of a mess.
Do you know what I mean? So like,
and that's the one club
that me
the top enders. I'm going to say top end. I don't mean
that for a bit of comfort. Yeah.
They make us look normal, don't they?
But what I want to happen is I want what's best for Manchester United. So I don't want to go into the whole being like tribal and being like player FC or manager FC over the club. What I want the best for is backing what's going to get the best for Manchester United, in my opinion.
Glenn F says he's been assured for next season, I believe. I've heard this a few times, but then I wonder. Because I think the issue that Eric Ten Hag's got is, unlike Joel and Avram Glazer and even Ed Woodward, Dave Brailsford and Jim Ratcliffe watch the matches.
Yeah.
They do. And sometimes they sit in the stands. And I'm telling you now, if Ratcliffe's at United on Sunday when we play Liverpool, if we get battered and he hears that crowd turning, I'm telling you, it's going to be very difficult for him to back that manager. Jonathan, it's been an absolute pleasure having you back on the channel. Where can people find you? What are you up to?
Very little in terms of United. I do very little now.
But do you know, you used to break the team news, didn't you? And you used to get stick for it, didn't you?
I used to get stick for that, yeah. So I gave that up.
John.
Yeah.
And then what I loved about it, right, I will never ask anyone to reveal the sources, but you obviously had a very reliable source that gave you the team news. So you put the team news out there. And then when things start going wrong, people want to blame anyone. So they'll blame you.
Yeah.
It's absolutely. You leaking the team news, giving the opposition a heads up when it's obviously nonsense.
I could picture you chuckling on that, John.
Really? That's why United lost, because Jonathan Schwager tweeted the team news 10 minutes before everyone knew it. Yeah, that was the issue.
That was an easy scapegoat. I didn't mind, to be fair, deflect from a few of the players a little bit. So I do very little with United now, but obviously still go to a lot of the games and keep up with it. And no, it's nice occasionally to come on and vent a little bit.
No, listen, you're always welcome. It's always good chatting to you. It's been, like I say, you've been a part of this channel for a long, long time, and it's good to have you back on. Just before I get to you, Ronnie, Modern Samurai says he has young players and none of them seems to develop habits he prefers. So whose fault is that? I just think Eric Ten Hag is a poor coach and worse manager. Dearie me. Ronnie, what are you up to this week? Well, you're like Joe this week, aren't you?
Am I?
Are you Joe Smith this week?
I don't think I can extend a little bit. Do you know what I mean?
What are you on this week?
I think I'm here for Chelsea and Liverpool.
Chelsea and Liverpool. That's big, that. Hey, I'm glad you're here for Liverpool, because I'm not. Joe's not.
You know what's, the first Chelsea watch along for me to do, but was up, was like, it's good because United, there was a lot going on in the game.
Yeah.
United actually played all right. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If it's the complete opposite, I think Sunday's going to be a lot more difficult.
Right. Well, I'm here with you on Thursday, bro. We're in that together. Yeah. And then Sunday, I'm going to venture towards Old Trafford again. To you know, who knows though? We won last time. You know what I mean? So yeah, thank you to everyone who got involved in the comments and the chat. Also, a big shout out again to Dave Briscoe for sharing those memberships. There's extra content on the membership. Also, shout out to Stephanie Griffith, who always puts out a shout about likes. She's always encouraging people to like. I think Dave Briscoe, has he done it again? I think he's gifted, forgive me if I'm getting this wrong, but I think he might have gifted more memberships, or is that just what he did initially? I'm not sure. But he's been a very, very big supporter of the channel, and we do appreciate it. Go and check out Jonathan Schwager on your socials as well. Make sure you check out Ronaldo Brown, as always. And a big thank you to Beer52 for sponsoring this podcast. That's been Jonathan. That's been Ronnie. I've been Jay. This has been the Paddock Podcast. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. Thanks for watching. Sports Social Podcast Network.